Hello, everyone. It is Tyler Bryden here. It's been a bit again. Every time I do one of these, I say it's been a bit. And I tell myself, and I probably say, that I'm going to be back here soon. And I let myself down. But I'm here. I'm ready to go, and I'm ready to talk. And, you know, I try my best. I think, again, this is one of those things where you need to have, force of habit. You need to will yourself into doing it, into creating content. Struggle with this continuously. I think, again, it always comes back to, a couple reasons. I think people are obviously busy. I think that's why a lot of people sort of shy away from content creation. It takes a lot of mental capacity and energy to even, try to do a half-decent job at it. For myself, and I think for many other people, it's just like, what do we have to say? And as I've gotten older, I've really starting to realize, again, like many of us do, just how important and crucial time is. And so a lot of times you do try to be considerate of that. And sometimes if I just feel like I was sharing things that are so mundane or so, unspecial in this world where there are so many beautiful and special things, that sometimes it's possibly not worth sharing. And, definitely I feel that there are many people who don't share that same sentiment. Many of us are sharing really, really everything, including all those mundane things. And in many ways, that I believe actually builds a stronger relationship. And maybe the mundane part of human life is something that bonds us, especially with people that we're following or look up to or admire. But in my case here, I just don't always have a lot to say. Don't get access to the time and space to feel like you have the ability to do a nice job recording high quality audio, but also just having the capacity to sit there and think and really focus while you're doing this. And luckily I have an opportunity like that today. It is just something I can't not say. It's 4:20 here in Canada, so happy holidays to all my 420ers in Canada. It's a legal celebration this year, and I think that's really exciting for a lot of people. And there has been so much hype and energy and fallouts and challenges, but also wins all throughout this process of legalization here in Canada, and specifically us here in Ontario have seen quite the rollout, and lots of back and forth between people and trying to judge how that rollout went. I myself, not too sure. I think there is obviously a significant amount of people on the black market here, and that's something that seems to be echoed in the statistical studies that are being passed around. And I think that makes a lot of sense. People are boiling it down to several reasons. I think is price. There's a lot of position and pricing that the black market is doing, especially some of these delivery services. Convenience, I would say, even plays a factor into that. Apparently, the quality of marijuana from especially the Ontario Cannabis Store and a lot of these, government systems and LPs are not of high quality, especially as they can't really meet the demand right now. And I don't know if that is just leading them to having low quality, products. A lot of people are sort of disappointed with the amount of packaging actually associated with them. So I don't know. I mean, that seems like a small issue, but it could contribute. And I don't know. Do people just not trust the government? I don't know why. There's still, I think those are pretty good reasons why the black market is still so existent. But there's just some underlying features there, and I think more of a psychological side of people too, who are just not that trustworthy of government operations and actually prefer to operate outside the system in that black market. So what do I want to talk about today? Tonight it's coming to a late night, and anyone who's probably listened to any of these in the past has noticed it's usually when my wonderful girlfriend Robin is gone somewhere. I'm at home here. And I'm in my home studio here now tonight, and take the opportunity for where I have some silence and you know, try to put it into a productive capacity. And, you know, I think I've maybe told this story before, but I had a good friend who I admire very much who always sort of broke it down to two things for me. And that was, you know, create. You're either creating or you're either consuming. And a lot of times, especially on nights like this, I'll find myself consuming. I'll be doing a lot of reading and watching, you know, videos or podcasts or things like that. And sometimes I think it's just necessary for people to actually create. And so that's what I'm trying to do today. I've been just, you know, also just, I think, semi-inspired by a lot of things lately. Some of those just, some of my, you know, podcasts that I've enjoyed myself. You know, if, and I'm not too deep into the podcast game. Really, all I get my fixes from, you know, Joe Rogan. I really like Aubrey Marcus, and so they actually had an episode here together, so that was really nice. Michael Pollan was also on Aubrey Marcus, so some really interesting podcasts lately. And I, you know, as I've shared before as well, I get a lot of my kicks out of audiobooks and you know, really, you know, see Audible, you know, an Amazon product there as, you know, a godsend almost. And that's, you know, no one likes to say that to a corporate entity, I guess, but to me, man, that application and that subscription has paid off so many times over. And I'm listening to just a fantastic book right now called Laws of Human Nature. And that's actually by Robert Greene, who wrote the 48 Laws of Power. And so, you know, that book has actually had quite a, I think, an impact on you know, on the world and the way from the, I don't know, I think it was a pretty popular book, but, you know, what I've sort of continually seen as I've, you know, I read that book and then just explored what people were saying about that. You know, there was a lot of hip-hop stars like Jay-Z and Nas and, you know, all these, you know, rap people from, you know, from the early 90s and stuff. And there's all these people who just have contributed some of their knowledge and success and the way they've maneuvered through this world to that 48 Laws of Power book. I read that, I think, last year. Fantastic, fantastic book. And, you know, get some criticism for almost giving you a path of manipulation to the top of the power hierarchy in this world. And so some people, like, you know, didn't like that. I thought it was very interesting. And, you know, a lot of it about, you know, psychology and humans, and this book here, Laws of Human Nature, goes, I would say, even more deeply into that, looking at, you know, different kinds of people, narcissists or different kind of courtiers, you know, when people were, you know, more, you know, when recording someone, different kinds of quarters, who are they, broken down into sort of archetypes and then explored and, you know, even shown sort of how to deal with, how to read and, you know, how to understand and deal with them if you're facing those kind of archetypes. And so I just feel like when you get to consume some really good content like that, and, you know, I would even say, as we've continued to work on the Speak project here, just getting some inspiration from seeing updates and progress with that work, and so it makes you want to create a little bit again. And so again, I wanted to take this time here tonight to actually create instead of consume. And in many cases, when I do that, you know, you feel that reward in the end, and that reward is many things. And one thing I've continued to focus on lately while considering this, and I think even contributes to some of the you know, the pauses in the creation for myself and for many people, is just the lack of maybe feedback, the lack of people listening, or, you know, the views or the people commenting and engaging with the kind of content that you're creating. And so if you're, you know, putting a lot of work, and not necessarily that, you know, something like this is a lot of work. I'm lucky to have a good technical sound system set up and be able to do at least a decent quality broadcast without too much work. But it's still a commitment of time, and a lot of people are, you know, are trying to build something for themselves, but also understanding the practicality of the real world that we're in. And so, you know, when you're creating content, and, you know, so many people are so passionate about podcasting and long form content right now, you put the time in, you put the effort in, and you don't get the feedback, you don't get the comments, you don't get the likes. And I think that can lead to a lot of people to not want to continue, because in some ways, you know, podcasts seem to be a really direct, in a good way to sort of connect with the tribe. And I think that's really important. And but when you put that work in and you put that time in and you don't get that connection, it can lead to a pretty disappointing outcome for you. And so in that case, a lot of people actually sort of stop broadcasting, stop doing it, especially in the state of comparison, when looking around at people who are getting the attention and getting that traffic and engagement that maybe you want. So I think I get caught up in that sometimes. I'm like, oh, I'm doing this. Why am I doing this if no one's really listening? Or, if they are listening, that they're not going to sort of comment and engage anyways. But I think that, in this recent times, what I've continued to sort of spot in just sort of, great people that I sort of follow is this, idea of just trusting and loving the process. And, you hear variations of this. Not about the reward. It's about the journey. Whatever. All those sort of sentiments, right? Like the people who seem to be, not even people who seem to be successful. It's people who seem to be fulfilled, seem to love what they're doing and trust the process, and just love the opportunity to be able to build or design or create or do whatever they do. And the people who do that don't suffer because they love that part so much, and so they're not as concentrated on the outcome or the reward. And I think that's a really, really important thing to think about. It's something that I try to build in my life. And when it's too focused on metrics or too focused on outcomes in that regards, then I know I might be sort of leading astray. And that's not to say that it's not important to have metrics, not important to have things to track. I consider that very, very important. And I've really built my life around metrics and data and outcomes of did this work or did this not, and having to be able to show that. And so I'm advocating for both sides here. There needs to be a focus on outcome if you do want an outcome, but what really matters is, do you love the process of building or creating whatever it is to get to that outcome? And whether that's you're an entrepreneur in a startup, you're a musician trying to make your first album, you're an artist trying to become a great artist and sell your paintings, all those things, you want that outcome in the end. But if you don't love the process that's going to get you there, there's really no, really, I mean, not that there's no point, but you're going to suffer along the way. And, there's different kinds of suffering. People who are suffering, intentionally because they love the process so much that they hope the outcome is going to come. But then there's the people who are suffering, who are only suffering because they think they're going to get that outcome. And I think that's a big nuance. I think I've been on both sides of that. I don't really know where I would even say I sit now. I think like many people, we're multi-capacity. We have a multi-capacity. I want to basically build the things that I want. I think that I've identified some places of value and an opportunity to build things that could actually help people, and I would like to do that. But at the same time, I of course have to be practical. I need to focus on the metrics that are going to get me there, and whether that's revenue per month, amount of leads, led client, recurring revenue, profit margin, whatever those things are, to get me to the outcome, which is, what is that outcome? That outcome changes for so many people. For myself, that outcome can be a mix of, I think, several things that are normal for most people. What they want, some stability, security. Obviously, with that comes capital, and in this capitalist system, it would be nice to have a significant amount of capital to not. For myself, not to really even keep all for myself, but to have the ability to comfortably and securely be able to continue build and create the things that I want to build. And, with that significant amount, sharing that quite generously with the people who are doing that. And, you know, really, you know, I question why, you know, why would I do something different if this is the life that we get? And really, you know, I only get one. Then why wouldn't I at least find something that, you know, that you love the process? And, you know, I think that can make life really enjoyable. And I get caught up in, like we all do, get caught up in those metrics. And, you know, right now there's a big investment period. And, you know, I've raised, you know, a little bit of funding and some grants for this project I'm on. But that's a lot of it's based off reimbursement. So, for example, I have to spend the money up front before I get that money back. And so there's all these kinds of stresses that go along with investing and trying to grow what you're doing, whatever that is. And again, if that's a startup entrepreneur, if that's artist, whatever situation that is, you're taking a risk doing what you're doing. But we need people like you, and you know, if you're out there and you're grinding and you're trying to grow and develop or invest in something that you believe in, we need people like you. So stick with those things that you love the process. You know, one thing that I will say is, in my own life, I've been in that process for quite a while now. And I think that's something that's really interesting. And I think that I'm gonna go down this thought process, and hopefully this will parallel maybe some things in your own life. But when I look back at everything that I'm doing right now, I can trace, you know, almost significant events, a lineage, and even I would say almost like environmental and genetic things that have contributed to who I am today and where I am today. And then the things I'm working on, which, you know, luckily I actually do enjoy, that I love, and I love that process. And so, you know, I have this sort of joke that I tell if someone asks, you know, why advertising and, you know, digital marketing and all this stuff, and it's because I love this movie, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. It had Matthew McConaughey in it, and Kate Hudson, and, you know, it was just this hilarious movie, and Matthew McConaughey was an advertising executive in that movie. But something about seeing that, and you could see in that movie him working on the whole movie, he's working through these drafts of, you know, these big projects that he's doing, and they're all, you know, conceptual and arts and everything, and it's driven, and shows the process as him developing that. And so when I look back, you know, that's just a small movie and event, but it's something that I remember from my early childhood that opened my eyes up to, you know, what advertising was, how cool it was, you know, what Matthew McConaughey was doing in moving, the opportunities that gave you, the cities that you live in, and obviously Kate Hudson and beautiful women and all these things that came with that. And you can take, you know, small significant events, like small, big, or significant events like that, trace them all throughout your life, childhood, and, you know, I'm trying to think of another one. Like, when I look at what I was doing in school, and am I, you know, going through Western University here, it was the selections of the courses that I took. You know, looking back at that, and I have lots of range in elective courses that I could take throughout my program, and the ones that I chose to do were all seemed to line up with, you know, for say digital marketing or technology or things like that. And so I guess what I'm trying to get to is, if you're trying to understand why you're working on what you're working on, or you're trying to understand what your passion is, or that process that you should choose to, and I'm not sure exactly how I got on this tangent, but this idea of loving the process, if you are trying to discover that, you can look back and sort of trace all those significant events or just interest in your life or things that made you feel a little special or excited you a bit more than other things. If you look back and you trace all those things, I think you can really find a core or foundational element of yourself that shows the process that you will love and that you can undertake and sort of happily undertake without having to be only tied to the metrics that go along with that work that you do. And so by choosing something that you love the process, and this is, you know, always I think what some you hope, and in myself I'm telling myself as well too, if you trust the process, if you do what you love and you work hard at it, when you love something and you work hard at it, it seems like you can pierce, and there's such a path of least resistance that maybe the sacrifices that you're making in the short term pan out in the long term. But not even that, because again, that gets back to that metric focus thing. But that process in between will be more enjoyable, even if you don't get, say, the same metrics that you would hit in the alternate life. So say you don't make as much money in your life being an artist, but every day you got to paint, work on beautiful things, you got to meet other artists, you got to sell some of your paintings and had amazing rewards throughout doing that process. You know, it would that can be a more positive life than, and maybe you won't make the money, than say the second life where maybe you go more on that path of practicality and you maybe make more money, you do the standard traditional things, but in a lot of cases we see unfulfillment, unsatisfaction in those. And so what is a better path to take? And these are hard things to question ourselves, and especially when, you know, there's different options here on that second path. Even though it might not be as fulfilling, in a lot of cases they can be more comfortable. And so what really can be more enjoyable, or what's a better life? Is it a comfortable life, not maybe doing everything you love and not feeling as fulfilled? Maybe you can do that as a hobby or something on the side, and maybe there is a beautiful balance of this that can be met. Because when you go that other path, the more risky maybe path, you have the chance that that outcome isn't going to happen. And I think anyone who is good of heart, who works hard, who's smart and does what they love and does it in an intelligent way, I believe that there's some outcome along that pathway that will be good. And I've seen that many times. I think there's so many, you know, for example, going back to artists who thought they were going to be the, you know, the best, most famous artists of this day, and maybe that didn't come out and they didn't get to sell their paintings on the national stage, but they actually ended up being an art curator for a highly revered person or a museum or organization or something like that. And so although they didn't maybe get the amazing outcome that they originally saw, they exited at 75% into a position which was truly, truly beautiful. And it was because they explored that part of their life, that process and those things that they loved, that they actually got to do that. Whereas in many ways, the person who never explored that, took the opportunity to explore those things, might not have identified that or would have had the opportunity to end up in a position that truly is fulfilling. I don't know. And again, I think it's somehow hard to give advice when you're still on that journey yourself. And it felt like growing up and thinking that I'm from born in 1992, that advice was given with the idea in mind that the world was going to stay largely the same. But you know, as many of us have apparently seen here, the world is accelerating at quite a significant speed. There is drastic change all the time, both culturally, politically, now with, you know, climate change, environmentally. You know, all this, so much has changed since I remember growing up and getting advice through, you know, movies or television shows or from parents. And it was all this sort of traditional advice that had been passed down since the 40s or some generation. And, you know, the reason why that advice continues to get passed around is because, it had worked. In the past, it was all these things, you know, you work hard, you know, whatever. Go to school, you work hard, get a job, buy a house, you know, all those things, they were true. And yet in so many ways today, the advice that was so widely considered, you know, the primary foundational advice to listen to, as it's changed so significantly. And that's something that so many of us are dealing with every single day. And, you know, when I say, you know, that little tangent that I just went on there, that I hope that, you know, the trust the process mentality is worth it, if whether the outcome comes or whether it's not, really, I have no idea. It's something I'm theorizing myself and trying to understand. And when we're in such a time of, you know, such change, some people call it chaos, it's really hard to take too much weight in what I'm thinking or believing, or really what other people are believing. And I think that's something that we continue to see, is comments and beliefs and people that we used to have a lot of trust and faith in aren't necessarily taken with as much weight because of how quickly things can change. And I think there's a lot of examples of this. One that sticks out in my mind right now would be, probably about 6 months ago, maybe longer than that, where I think Zuckerberg and some of the Facebook executives appeared in front of the American politicians. I think it was the Senate. I'm not sure if it was the Senate or the House or both. But some of the ridiculous questions that were getting asked, why, when I look at a chocolate bar or talk about chocolate online, do I then see chocolate advertisements? These people asking these questions are supposed to have the most authority in the country, and in that American country, and really be representative of some of the most authority in the world. And they're asking questions that any 12-year-old or 13-year-old who has ever interacted with something online knows. And so when things are so radically different from generation to generation, and so much information, things accelerate, the cultural mood changes so quickly. And, I don't even want to go on this separate tangent, but one of the ways that, through memes, and memes have been around so long, that it's so easy now to but change the culture in just, either significant or small ways. And I think, a certain meme can change almost an entire culture's perspective. And I try to think of it, here's a good one, for example, creepy Joe Biden. Creepy Joe Biden has ran into a lot of trouble lately because this meme that has been, spawned from, some of these video clips and, pictures of his activities all through his political career. And that meme, because of its shareability, because of the different variations of it all expressing the same meaning, can be shared so quickly that the cultural reference point, the cultural perspective, can change so quickly as well too. And with that, you see an example of an authoritative figure pulled down so quickly, and we just didn't have the capability to do that in the past. It was, you think of Nixon and you think of Watergate and you think of the process that went into that, or you think of Bill Clinton and his demise, and sometimes the length and time that went into those. But now, with just a quick edit of an image with some words on it or a green screen of something, we can tear someone's reputation down. Just to continue down that thought, you look at the Me Too environment, and the movement of that, not necessarily just memes, but the quick distribution of information around a certain hashtag or certain pocket, like a subreddit or something like that. So quickly, these communication channels have allowed us to radically alter the world, the environment, our culture on a day-to-day, second-to-second basis. And that obviously has a lot of consequences for us living here as humans day-to-day. Now, I'm coming up on 30 minutes here, and I'm sitting here alone on a Friday night. Now in the dark, I've actually I've done the opposite. I've darkened the room that I'm in, and so I just have a couple screens here. I've got a nice microphone stand, and I wouldn't even say I've got a couple screens. I've got three screens. It's sort of ridiculous at this point, but I'm starting to actually question whether having three screens is the most productive thing. One of the developers on my team right now said a great point the one day that, I said to him, I love having my three screens, and I want five more. I want as many screens as I possibly can. But, you know, the focus, in a sense, but Tyler Lifton, the focus that comes along with one screen and the resourcefulness that you need to have is pretty impressive. Here I am spread out on three screens wanting, you know, four more so I can have one program open on every one, and yet with the right shortcuts, with the right work process, that could be unnecessary. So thanks for that. So along with that, I guess I'd like to talk about just a couple things that you know, that have been parts of my life here lately since the last time I've you know, done one of these broadcasts. And again, that has been too long. It's been a bit. But I've sort of mentioned in the last couple episodes here, I've been working on this project Speak. That has been actually incorporated into a business, Speak AI Inc. And it's been pretty interesting 4 months here. So first 4 months of 2019, I incorporated the business January 9th, 2019. With a little bit of superstition there. And just as a note on that, number 19 for Steve Yzerman. Steve Yzerman is returning as the general manager of the Detroit Red Wings after Tampa Bay had a horrible falling out after this playoffs here. And that's a really, really exciting thing. So side note on that, Steve Yzerman, you're coming home. Looking forward to, I'm hoping, a dynasty number two here in Detroit. What an amazing thing that would actually be. But in that 4 months, again, taking that superstition, I put that incorporated that business, and was lucky enough to got $12,000 in funding through the Western Accelerator Program. So that's Canadian dollars, and was really paid out just once a month through a check. So every month you get that, and that has allowed me to then, you know, put some confidence actually starting the project. Gave me the ability to hire a developer, and this developer's name is Vatsal. Who has been an absolute blessing in my life, and anyone who has wanted to solve a big hairy problem, who has some technical ability but is not a full stack developer or a big, you know, programmer at heart, knows how important it is to find someone who you can rely on and count on for the work that you need to do. And so Vatsal has filled that role and been a huge part of some of the success and progress that we're actually making. That's actually continued, and with Vatsal's work, we realized we sort of had a gap on some front-end design, and we needed to get a little bit more support around the development. And so I had the opportunity to hire an awesome guy named Richard, who's really worked in some fantastic other companies and brings a wealth of knowledge, and has already made an impact both on the look and the feel of the work we're doing, but also on the, you know, giving us a better process to do that. And he's been really helpful both with the development of our Project Speak, but also with the current business 6.5, and a lot of the marketing and what we're doing, and with a lot of experience with WordPress and sort of LAMP stack development, PHP, WordPress, JavaScript, MySQL. He brings a lot to the table. Lucky enough also to have some amazing interns who I can't thank enough for the work that they've done. They come from the MIT program that I did at Western University, and I've had mixed thoughts on this program and my own experience in the program. But in many cases, I do believe the way that they teach that course and what they focus on can actually set you up for a lot of success in this this ever-changing, chaotic world that we're living in. And so the students who come out of this program often, I find, don't exactly know what to do with their hands. They're anxious to take this theoretical knowledge that they've been given and put it into practical use. And I'm lucky enough to have gone through that program and understand what some of those more theoretical concepts that they learned are. And a lot of that program, if you're questioning what MIT is, it's not the MIT school. That would be nice. It's the, we sort of call it, make the joke, the crappy MIT. And in that, we look at a lot of critical, look very critically at media information, a lot of media theory, cultural studies, sort of information science. I wouldn't say information science, more of a sociology degree, but a lot of so philosophical looks. So for example, something like Panopticon, Michel Foucault, looking at gender, looking at the male gaze, looking at how media impacts the culture, and how technology is going to change us both as humans physiologically, but also psychologically and also culturally and spiritually. And, you know, by understanding a little bit of that knowledge and going through that program, it's really quite an easy and wonderful process to take that knowledge and transfer it into the work that we're doing. And so I was lucky enough to have intern Ainsley and Lexi. Thank you. If you ever listen to this, you guys were absolutely awesome and contributed to a lot of amazing work. And if you ever go and check out anything on Speak, you can see some of the early sort of social media stuff and some really great blog posts and articles on the site. They did an awesome job with that. And I know those two will have a lot of success in the world because not only is their mind sort of primed through theory in school, they just, you know, what was awesome is had an awesome internship experience here where they got to learn some really practical stuff. And it's been amazing. It's really a humbling and rewarding thing to be able to do and to hear, you know, one of them said multiple times that they feel like they've learned more in that internship than they learned in their whole university career. And that's a sort of, shot at university, and I love you, Western, and love you, university, because I think, and I, you know, that's debatably probably not true. But that is a really interesting thing to hear. And, you know, with some of that experience, and if they continue down that practical road and take, you know, their minds and their ability to write and look at it with data and look at it with metrics and print, you know, going back on that marketing side, looking more at those outcomes and trying to build content or do their work around that, it's going to set them up for a lot of success. And so, you know, that has been quite a process, working not only with, you know, really bringing two developers and working with them on a pretty substantive basis, but also now, you know, with two interns. They're gone now, finishing their last semester here, and are sending off, but we'll always sort of continue that relationship and be thankful for the work that they've done. And so I can't be more happy with some of the quality of the students coming out of these programs. And if you are looking on growing something and trying to build a business or company, I encourage you to actually try to explore that method and process and see if there is a school or a university or college or even high school students or anyone nearby who's willing to volunteer and do an internship for you. And of course, there is the aspect of, okay, is this free labor? Of course, I give an honorarium and there's quite a good experience involved in this, but depending on what you're doing, that experience is truly valuable. And I wish I had had the opportunity in school or even at a younger age to approach a business owner and understand what the world they were living in was like. And I've, you know, been lucky enough to be able to be very transparent and open with them. And I think that's a really eye-opening experience to understand a little bit more about the real world, and especially from someone who's not that much older than them or that much farther along, but has obviously had at least a little bit of success to be able to be able to provide this experience for them. And I guess along with that, sort of talked about that grant from the Western Accelerator. That Western Accelerator grant opened me up to actually some more grants. And one of those was actually called OCE Smart Start. And lucky and proud, I guess, to say that we were successful in getting that grant. So that was actually a $30,000 grant, which is a little bit bigger. We had to match that, so we actually have to spend $30,000. I've contributed $12,000 over from that Western Accelerator, which we can apply towards that. And so there's another $18,000, which then needs to be covered by revenue or investment or in-kind gifts. I think we've got that covered, but again, you have to pay that up front and then you get reimbursed. But that $30,000 really allows me to put more time and energy into this project. I think it's starting to become pretty exciting, and you know, in some ways to me obvious that this is a path I should at least be exploring. It could be an expensive multi-year and challenging task, and it's in a space with voice here that is probably going to be very competitive and intense. But I think I might have a path here to pull this off successfully. I'm really happy with where we are right now. And if I continue building a great team and keeping the people who I'm working with right now who are amazing happy, we've got a really good shot at actually doing something. And so we're trying to explore what that actually looks like. And I guess just a couple notes on that funding. Like, that was quite a rigorous application that we actually had to put in. There's a lot of commitment that goes in with reporting to go along with that. And again, it's not like it's cash up front. You need to pay, have the receipts. You need to show the reimbursements that needed to be made. And so it's not just a, wow, $30,000 in our pocket. It's actually some work that is required. So with that, that total comes to $42,000. That's in grants so far that's been raised for this business. $42,000 can seem like a lot, but when you have talented developers, you've got, you know, an office space, you've got software expenses, and you're trying to advertise a business, especially one that is a bit innovative, that's not that much money. And so you have to look at what are the options that you have. And you know, there's a couple choices here. One of them, you know, is obviously bootstrapping. I think there is absolutely something beautiful with bootstrapping. In many ways, I've sort of done that with 6.5. I've been doing with Speak, raising grants where I can get them, but not really taking on a venture investor or an angel investor and then trying to get clients or revenue to actually build that up yourself. And maybe that slows down the process and a little bit more, but you get to keep more control and maybe in several ways have validated and built maybe a stronger a business. I put a question mark at the end of that because I'm not necessarily sure if that's true. You know, the other options, many people would look at raising capital from angel investors. That's something that is, you know, I think sort of considerable and something that I've considered because a lot of these want a return from the work that they're doing, but they aren't focused on the same returns that an actual venture capitalist is seeking, who's looking for, you know, if you're going down the venture capital route, looking for, and this is, you know, maybe I shouldn't stay, you know, I shouldn't generalize across everything here, but generally this is the experience that, you know, I've had from who I've met. I've had from people who have successfully raised money, who are in venture capital, all these pieces. They're looking for a 10 or more times return. And a lot of times the only way you can actually accomplish that is by going public or doing, you know, a pretty massive acquisition. And with that comes a pretty intense pressure and scrutiny because in many of these cases, again, that could be a large investment. And if, you know, and with that becomes a lot of times a lack of, you know, maybe a lack of control. And so if something's not going well, you could actually be thrown off, you know, thrown out of your own company, for example. And so there's a lot of avenues you can take: bootstrapping, angel investing, other investing. There's loans, there's traditional kinds of and financing, there's friends and family. There's so many different ways that you can actually start a business. And in many cases, I think it's really easy for a business to fail. It's really easy for the business that I'm working on here right now to fail because, again, there's a lot more expenses along with it. With 6.5, I could keep really low overhead. I could return to, you know, whatever, $1,000 a month for managing Google Ads or something. And with, you know, under 10 clients, I'm making quite a happy living by myself or whatever that looks like. With this, I have... the investment that's getting reimbursement. I've got some money that I've had built up through 6.5 and is part of the cash flow there, which I'm contributing. And then other parts is like I need to rely on either getting more investment, I need to rely on lines of credit, or I need to figure out other avenues, whether that's revenue, grants, or investment to continue this going. And so when I look at that again, we talk about that at the sort of some point in this ramble on that I'm going on is, I'm loving the process that I'm in right now, but I also have to be very aware and cognizant of the outcome that I'm focused on, because if I can't hit outcomes, and whether that's, again, revenue or grants or investment made, I am no longer able to continue the process that I'm on. And I love that process so much. I want to continue on that. And I think, you know, in my heart, in my guts, but also analytically, if I continue on the process, I'm going to deliver something of value for somebody here that's worth some money. And so how do I get there? How do you get there? Many people have been in the same sort of situation. It's really interesting to try to understand how they went about that, where they were successful, where they weren't. And continually, I'm lucky enough and privileged enough to be able to connect with people and build a network of people who are on similar paths of myself. And many of them I love very much, I respect very much, and have had some success or have had some failure and are very open and transparent with those. So lately I've had some friends who have raised money and quite a significant amount of money. So I can actually go and use them as resources to try to understand how they did it and the thought process that they went through. And I don't know the path that I want to take. And again, in my mind, maybe bootstrapping and building this and finding an enterprise client who loves what we're doing and wants to invest in us. Maybe that can supplant the you know, the cash flow they'll need, the stability to actually build what we're working on. And I truly hope that we can get there with that. But in some cases, we might not be able to, for example, get the platform to where we want it to be for them to be willing to pay for it before we run out of money or something. You know what I mean? Like, there's all these things that you have to navigate through. And again, and those are a lot of times the reasons that the business fails, not necessarily that it's a bad product or a bad idea or a bad service. And so I'm trying to navigate through that. One thing that I've been very transparent with myself is I've somehow, in the last several years, I'm almost 4 years sort of by myself full-time as an entrepreneur with 6'5", and now Speak Here continued. I've been okay sort of moving along with my gut and charging people what I think is right and trying to do my best to make estimates. But now I'm in a space where those decisions can have a lot bigger consequences. And, you know, I'm now paying developers and other people and taking risks that are larger than what I've done in the past. And so I'm trying to put a better focus on accounting, on budgeting, on forecasting, on charging, all these things where I've been able to sort of get along at 6'5", doing that and, you know, putting extra time and effort in to make up if I've misquoted something or whatever that's been. But with Speak, for example, if I price something wrong or I time a launch wrong or I don't deliver for a potential customer, that game can be over really quick. And so I don't want that to happen. I'm having a lot of fun, and I think we are creating something of value. And I don't know if you feel that way. Maybe that is the time you take that path and you take that risk and you take the process. Now, if any of you are interested, I guess just a couple thoughts on why we were successful with raising that funding. One of them was a written, so for the Western Accelerator, it was $12,000. That was a written application and then do an in-person pitch. And then the Smart Start, you had to be referred by an organization like that Western Accelerator to be sort of eligible. And then once you were, there was a pretty substantial written application with a lot of basically almost a business plan, basically, and a lot of milestones and budgets. And that was pretty substantial. So throughout that process, I think there was a really big focus by myself on trying to take some, you know, we're working on, you know, technology, speech to text, natural language processing, sentiment analysis, machine learning, artificial intelligence, all that stuff, blah, blah. That's great, but that doesn't necessarily connect with the people that you're pitching to. And a lot of times, you know, part of this process that I'm working on with Speak is understanding that when we try to go with the buzzwords or these big intelligent words, we're alienating a lot of times the audience that we're dealing with. And not only because maybe they don't know the words, but it also becomes across as arrogant and you're showing an inability to want to try to connect with them because if you're using jargon, you're using words that they don't use in their day-to-day business just to try to show off. And so I think taking what we're doing and trying to distill it very simple and clearly for that Smart Start application for $30,000, I had the application written and they'd broken down almost every feature, you know, speaker identification, speech to text, you can export to PDF, you can, you know, all these features that we're capable of doing. And I thought, wow, this is really well laid out and it's understandable. But then I was like, it's not enough though. What else can I do? And what I did was insert screenshots of every single one of those features. And so not only did they get the description of it, which was, I think, already quite clear and well laid out, they also got an image of it. And so I think part of the success throughout that whole process, and I guess that's been sort of 6 months, very focused communication. making sure that it's articulate and intellectual, but distilled down to a very understandable and digestible way. And thinking, okay, I don't want to talk at a grade 12 level or university level. I want to go to a grade 8 level. And so can I take, you know, we use multiple machine learning methods to analyze audio, video, and text for, emotional qualities, et cetera, et cetera. No, it's we want to analyze audio and video and text so we can understand tone, personality, and clarity. You know, the difference there, still not the best, is pretty significant. So I've been there in my past using jargon to try to explain what I'm working on and realizing that does not get across and it only creates friction and conflict for the people who are trying to understand you. So don't do that. If you're trying to apply for any of these applications, these programs, or trying to raise funding, yes, there's going to be opportunities for you to deal with very technical people who are specific to what you're working on, who want to, you know, nerd out on the jargon with you, but in most cases, you're not going to. And so just put that stuff to the side and focus on how can I articulate what we're working on, the value proposition, the benefits of what we're doing, and how we're going to do it very, very clearly. And I would say that doesn't just go along with the communication in your pitch deck or your pitch or presentation or whatever that is. It's the actual product and how you're displaying it, that yourself. And so I pitched in the past, and what I've done is really only had a slide deck, for example, and I've gone through that and talked about what I've been working on. Especially when I was doing 6.5, I didn't really have anything I could show. But with that Western Accelerator, and you know, extensively with that, the screenshots of the features in that Smart Start, I was able to demonstrate the technology and the product that we were actually working on. And that gave me just a ton of power. For that Western Accelerator pitch, I had bombed basically an earlier pitch on the same technology that I was working on. And I felt like, wow, I really thought I did a decent job explaining it. And I thought it was a valuable sort of exploration of what I'm working on. But when I went and did this next version, I basically threw the slide deck to the side and I just demoed the product. And I showed them how it worked. Show them the technology, like how easy it was. And this was still in an early demo form, but it was just so clear by showing the product the value of it compared to by just talking to it. I just had to make them imagine it. And so if you have a product that's a prototype or demonstrable at all, put the focus on that. People, and you know, these people aren't just directly, I guess, investors, but they're people who are the gatekeepers of these programs, and a lot of them come from, you know, Ivy backgrounds and are very capable of being investors. That's what they look for. They want to see the technology, they want to see the product, and of course they care about the vision and they care about you and that you're, you know, they can trust you and you're going to be a good person. But if you can't show or demonstrate something, it does make it a challenge. And if there's anything, another thing I could say, it's if it's a product that you're building, put the focus on the product, do a really good job at the, you know, creating at least a prototype or a demonstration of that, and let it sit center stage. If you've got a technical people on your team and you've got some amazing smart math, business, marketer people, whoever they are, that's a huge value. And they put a lot of weight on that for teams, but especially for a company and one that they don't know the team or they don't know the founders, they're looking at that technology or they're looking at the product because that's going to be the driver of the success in the business. With that, I guess I would say the other thing that has helped me along this journey has been the fact that the business that we're working on, and again, that's basically taking audio, video, and text. You can run it through our dashboard. You can upload this content. That's going to extract insights out of it. So for audio and video, it's going to transcribe it. It's going to pull out the keywords, the topics, the speakers, and emotion. And we're building even more sophisticated sort of emotion, personality, and clarity analysis in it. And we're doing the same thing with text there. And so a lot of this is built around basically you speaking, you're doing presentations, you're communicating in everyday conversations, or you're writing content, you're creating content, you're emailing, doing press releases, blog posts, or sort of marketing materials. And because that is sort of all so wrapped up around speech and speech-driven things, there's sort of this tying, unifying things that brings us all together. And so I have a little, not even a little, of a pretty extensive demo I can show right on my phone in just a couple minutes. And because it's built around audio, video, and text, but also speech, and we all love speech so much, and again, bring it back to that talk about, you know, podcasts and the rise of this kind of stuff, because there's this thread, I can get some energy and excitement from every single person I sort of showed what we're working on to. And that's been honestly just an amazing thing. That's sort of lucky and a privilege because of the technology that we're working on and speak, and it's, you know, trying to help people communicate better, but then also do research and all these other great applications of being able to analyze this information. But if you can work on something that ties people together, or at least you can identify the groups and the audiences who there is this thing that ties them together, you're going to have a lot more success with showing off the product or the service or whatever you're doing is, because people get very enthusiastic when it's something that they relate to or they connect to. And so when I talk about speaking, I want to understand the emotion in YouTube videos. They think, wow, I watch so many YouTube videos too, and I've always wanted to understand that myself. Have you ever thought of analyzing this video? And then it goes down this, you know, the rabbit hole, the conversations that often start. And man, that has been an enjoyable thing. And not only that, it's been a gold mine of amazing ideas for what I want to do with this technology and the products that we're actually working on. So yeah, those are just a couple things I've pitched ideas and thought of a lot of things for several years now. And I've actually had some success with talking about this product, with this technology. And I think part of that comes with a newfound confidence in my own ability, understanding that we actually are working on something pretty damn cool here. And maybe an experience with a lot of blows to the, you know, to the head and to the ego along the way in the last several years. But for some reason this has been a little bit of less resistance on this part of the journey than I would have expected. And I think maybe a couple that can be broken down to those maybe three things that I just talked about a bit. So with that, I'm almost at an hour here, and so I think I'm going to shut this down. And again, it's always nice to be back and actually have a chance to do this. I apologize, I am so busy. So if anyone does actually enjoy listening to this, I'll be back in a bit.